Right. Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 9 of So Let's Talk Horror. I'm your host, Chris McAfee. And this week, we're going to be kicking off the episode again with some notable horror news updates before we jump into the movie review. All right. So first, and notably, very notably, we've got some awesome news in the realm of Panos Cosmatos' Mandy. I love when this title comes up because I love this film so much. I'm a big fan of this film. And arguably, one of the most batshit, badass moments in the film, and this is a spoiler alert, so caveat, spoiler alert, earmuffs for those that aren't ready for this, la 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 la, all right, I think we're ready. Basically, one of the most badass moments in the film occurs during a vicious chainsaw battle royale between Nicolas Cage, who's drenched in blood, by the way, awesome, and he grabs a chainsaw, doubly awesome, right? And then he launches in on this massive beast of a guy wielding a much, much bigger chainsaw. Triply awesome, right? So it's a fairly epic scene, to put it mildly, and it's absolutely bonkers. But Legion M, where I'm going with this, Legion M has actually recreated this battle scene in a new, and I might say quite striking, pun intended, collectible statue. The statue is a 1/10 scale, stylized, limited edition, collectible figure made by some very talented folks at Level 52 Studios. So, the memorable scene has been recreated in a detailed, brand new collectible statue now available for pre-order. The statue measures in, clocks in at 9 3/4 inch tall. It's 10 inches wide, 6.5 inches deep. Non-Legion M members will pay the full retail price of $249. And the work's estimated to be shipped out this December, actually, December 2020. So it's coming. It's nearly here. So it's really kind of cool. So head to Legion M's website. Make that happen if you're interested. I don't think you're going to be disappointed. It's very cool. At the very least, though, regardless if you're into buying the statue or not, whatever, but definitely check it out. Check out the style. It's really fucking rad. It's really great. So that's that. That really kind of pumped me up. That was a fun one to do. The next one I want to talk about is really near and dear to my heart. So let's talk My Pet Monster, shall we? That's a very loving sigh, by the way. 1986, Timothy Bond directed, High Tops released, the live-action direct-to-video movie basically turns this ordinary kid into this super rad monster with superhuman abilities. And that's basically what we're talking about. I probably drove my parents crazy renting this from the local video rental store. I'm pretty sure I wore out their copy of this film. I had rented it so many times. I love this film. So I was introduced to this when it was first released. And it just was one of those things that resonated with me. I'm pretty sure my brother's a pretty big fan as well. But like, you know, it just, we'd watch this thing and I was just totally enamored. It just was one of those things that just really hit me the right way. So, and I've been a huge fan of it ever since. So anyways, American Greetings had released back in the day, this super popular stuffed animal that basically it came handcuffed with these orange breakaway chains, which is really pretty fun. It's a great looking monster, actually. Super fucking rad looking. It's pretty iconic. So where I'm going with all of this is that our buddies over at Funko Pop will be bringing us a new traditional size vinyl of the fanged fuzzy blue and purple monster, which I'm super excited about. So currently, right now, we don't have a release date. There's no pre-order status provided yet. My hope is that we get some sort of an update here before long. So more on that. But as a side note, I got really excited about just this little news blurb in general, and it just, My Pet Monster stuck in my head. So I started, you know, researching around on the internet, and I do this from time to time with this title. Every so often, it comes up, and I'm like, oh yeah, My Pet Monster. You know, is there a DVD? Has this thing been, you know, restored and re-released on DVD yet? This thing has been stuck in the VHS phase and has never been re-released on a newer formatting, which is kind of a bummer. So, you know, as far as accessibility goes, that's always been kind of the sticking point. At this point, it's actually really the VHS copies are really pretty rare, and you're going to pay a pretty hefty sum of money to get your hands on one, let alone like a nice copy of it. So I've seen some pretty shabby looking variations of this floating around condition wise that are pretty shockingly expensive. So anyways, I would love to see somebody get the distribution rights to this, restore the film properly, and make something really cool out of it, release it on Blu-ray, DVD, and just get it on proper updated format, or at least, you know, get it to where we could watch a VOD, stream it live. That'd be kind of cool. So anyways, back to my research online. I ended up coming across, there was a user that put a full version of the film up on YouTube, which I was totally thrilled about. So I actually sat there. It's only a 60-minute runtime. It's really lightweight, but I'm not kidding. For like 60 minutes, I was just like pure childhood bliss. You know, I was so giddy. It was so much fun. I really had a good time. So that brought back a lot of memories. And actually, I hadn't seen that film in literally decades. I really haven't. I was actually really surprised by how much I recalled of the film. It was just like I went right back to that day, you know. It was really cool. So anyways, that was a lot of fun for me. Had to share it. Hope you enjoyed my little rant there. But so far, 2 for 2, a lot of fun. This third one, though, is a big deal as well. So certainly not least of the three. So anytime Criterion Collection announces anything, you know, eyebrows raised, you got my attention. So big news out of Criterion Collection. A recent announcement was provided that David Cronenberg's 96 adaptation of J.G. Ballard, who I love, great author, Wild West novel Crash, has been selected. So both a Blu-ray and a DVD will be released December 1st, 2020. I can't wait. It's a director-approved special edition. It's got a ton of features. It's loaded with them. They do include, and I will get into those briefly, we're getting a new 4K digital restoration supervised by director of photography Peter Straczynski of Empire Strikes Back fame, and a 5.1 surround DTS HD master audio soundtrack on the Blu-ray. Both of those are approved by David Cronenberg, director. Awesome. Big deal. Really big deal. We're going to get an audio commentary from Cronenberg circa 97, which I'm certain is very interesting, and that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that. We also get a press conference from the 96 Cannes Film Festival featuring Cronenberg, Straczynski, author J.G. Ballard, the producers, and the cast, which would be a lot of fun. There's a Q&A from 96 with Cronenberg and Ballard from the National Film Theater in London, which is going to be neat. There's also a lot of behind-the-scenes footage and press interviews from 96. We get some bonus trailers. At the end of this, we also get an essay by film critic Jessica Kiang. So that was notable. I'm really excited for that as well. So that's a pretty special thing. Pre-orders are currently being taken now. They're at least going to have one by me, you know, so there's that. I really want this one badly, so I'm pretty pumped about that. So anyway, three big ones, 3 for 3. That was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to all three of these things, and that was a lot. That was pretty exciting for the week. So, anyways, that wraps up the news break for this episode. So let's get into this week's highlighted movie title, and we have Depraved. Finally, I'm doing it. It's here. Really excited about this film, as you can probably tell. So this was brought to us by IFC Midnight in late 2019, sometime around September, I believe. I actually saw it in October then. I think it was like latter October. AFI put on a horror film festival, and that was one of the big premieres of the film festival. That was one of the main events. And any time director Larry Fessenden does anything, you know, you got my attention. So that was a lot of fun. So here we go. So anyway, let's get into the overview of the film. Mary Shelley, Frankenstein. Now you know what we're talking about. So we're launched into the now. Larry Fessenden's now. Really fucking cool, right? You know, This guy makes it happen. So we have Henry, played by David Call. He's a genius surgeon finding his way in everyday life, and he's still very much suffering from PTSD as a result following his celebrated, very celebrated actually, stint as an ex-army medic. He's put up by longtime schoolmate and best friend Polidori, played by Joshua Leonard, in a moderate Brooklyn apartment turned this Frankensteinian-esque laboratory, right? Henry obsessively forges his way into this existential realm of erasing death, playing God as we currently know it, by resurrecting life from mere pieces parts that he seemingly gathers along the way. He longs in a touching yet somewhat misguided desire, and it's a certainly demented, unethical execution, say that five times fast, right, to mitigate the ghosts of those unfortunate young men and women serving alongside him, ones he was unable to save during his military service. So body structure complete. Adam, who's played by very talented Alex Braw, now rises. With the guidance of Henry and by part aid of Polidori's pharmaceutical brilliance, Adam is kept upright, certainly. Next up for the team is showing Adam the ropes living within the current dregs of modern society. With everyone around Adam looking out for and somewhat obsessed with their own self-interest, has Adam really been set up for success or failure? And did he ever really have a chance? And will he be given an opportunity at a life of his own, lived on by his own accord? And if failure reigns over Brooklyn, what consequences are at hand for those around him? And those are going to have to be answered in time by pressing play on this fine film. And I'm really going to be encouraging everybody to do so. So, directed and written by indie horror film master and uber-talented Larry Fessenden. I am a big fan of his work, as you'll find out as we go along here. But getting into his filmography, segue into that, he's got a really interesting filmography, and it's a great one. So first we'll start with Beneath, his title in 2013. And then in 2006, he had the feature The Last Winter. 2001, his feature was Wendigo, which is very excellent. I really like that film a lot. 95 is Habit, which is also a very excellent film. He even wrote a horror gaming title, Until Dawn. I mean, the guy's everywhere, and he's doing all these amazing things, and he's really talented. And it's a cool thing that's happening. So anyway, breaking away from that a little bit, we'll come back to him here in a little bit, but let's take a look at the casting and get into the major billing. And we'll start no particular order as per usual, but I really want to start with David Call. He plays Henry, which we'll talk about a little bit more detail here, but getting into his filmography, he starred in Yegor Gravning's 2019 feature Wallflower, which is based on the untold story of Seattle's Capitol Hill massacre. He plays the murderer, and that's supposedly very wonderful. I haven't seen it myself yet, but aim to here before long, and excited for that. He's also in a TV series that's ongoing, being one titled The Sinner. Antonio Campos's, I believe it entered and started out in 2017, but it's basically an anthology series that examines how and why ordinary people commit brutal crimes. And he plays Anthony Brick Burkowski. Great name. Probably really great character. I want to see that too. So there's that. Now moving on from David Call, we'll jump over to Joshua Leonard, who plays Polidori in this film. And he does a fantastic job with this role. I was really impressed with that. And he's got a really interesting filmography. I did not realize he was in the Blair Witch Project. Daniel Myrick's 1999 smash hit indie film. He plays Josh actually in that film, and that's really wonderful. So he was also in R.J. Cutler's 2014 feature If I Stay, who he ends up playing Denny, and he's opposite Chloe Grace Moritz, and that is a sci-fi drama for you. So there's that. I'm gonna jump over to now. Alex Braw, who plays Adam the Monster, and man, he is really impressive in this. The cast overall is phenomenal, but He played in Loreen Scafaria's 2019 Hustlers, very popular and very well-reviewed. He plays a stockbroker in that. He's going to be in the upcoming feature by Noah Hutton in 2020 this year, titled Lapsus. And basically the synopsis on that is, struggling to support himself and his ailing younger brother, delivery man Ray takes a strange job in a strange new realm of the economy, and he plays Alpine. So there's a sci-fi mystery. It sounds really intriguing, and I'm excited for that. Next, we have Chloe Levine, who plays Lucy. And she just, we don't get a lot of her in this film, but what we do get, she's outstanding in. And she stars in Jen Wexler's 2018 hit The Ranger, playing Chelsea. So that's a really notable one. I've seen that. It's a great film. She's outstanding in it. So there's that. All right. And then finally, to round out the major billing of the cast, then, we have Anna Kane, who plays Liz. And she stars in Greta Gerwig's 2019 a hit, Little Women, which was outstanding. She plays Olivia. Really, really enjoyed that film. So so she is in that, and she does a wonderful job there, too. She's in Mike Cahill's 2011 feature, Another Earth, playing Claire, which is a sci-fi romance title. And I haven't seen that, but it sounds really interesting. So I'd be willing to give that a shot as well. So anyway, very talented cast, very well done, and we'll jump in the runtime then. And the runtime of this movie is 114 minutes or 1 hour and 54 minutes of pure Frankenstein. So yes, really, really fucking cool. So yeah, let's jump into to the notables then. This is a good segue. So we got Mary Shelley's legendary fable, Frankenstein, and we're getting a very refreshing and modern update in this very stylish, disturbing, and very emotionally devastating film from indie horror master Larry Fessenden. The film is actually, it's absolutely gorgeous. It's beautiful in every way. There's so many spots in this film that I was left pretty awestruck and really mesmerized by what was going on. Fessenden is at his best here, making what likely is a small budget look incredibly grand. It's much larger in scope on screen. You know, and I'd actually be really curious as to what his budget was for this film, but he's got a knack for being quite the magician this way. So I'm basically going to highlight some of those points with really being conscious of, you know, not getting into too much detail. I don't want to get into spoiler territory per se, right? So I'll dissect several of those scenes that really caught my eye, that were really cool, you know. So first up, and this is at the beginning of the film or towards the beginning of the film, we have Adam sitting back in his apartment loft chair, rewiring his brain to classical music at Henry's hand. You know, and you have all these rapid brain synapses firing like a blooming fireworks display on the 4th of July skyline, you know, real time overlaid across the film. You know, it's really, really, really cool how they made this effect work. And, you know, we get to see this effect too in a very devastating opening kill scene. So, you know, as far as effects go, you know, really, really a cool thing. It's nice work there. So that was a lot of fun. Next we have Adam hanging out the window of an SUV. It's Polidori's SUV in his first drive around the city. And, you know, he plays this part so well. I found that out about Adam Brawl is that his instincts for this role are really spot on. You know, I found myself really emotionally connected to his every move, like I was experiencing these new stimuli for the first time too. And it's easy to, you know, it's really easy to get wrapped up in. With that, you know, we really get enthralled seeing the world and really the city for the first time through his eyes for that reason, right? So that was really cool, you know. And then moving on from that, like later, you know, in the film, there's this hauntingly cinematic end scene around the mansion's exterior on the grounds as this storm is surging. And, you know, you have this lightning accenting the night sky, which definitely plays out like a love letter to Shelley's original. You know, in the film, it feels so large in scope, especially in this scene. It's a really special moment in the film, and it's a lot of fun for that reason. It's brilliant. So and it's actually very visually stunning as well. All right, so the last point, and this happens towards the very end of the movie, we get Lucy depicted outside, standing on these steps outside in the snow. And it's just the way that everything's sequenced and the way everything happens around her. And she's just kind of standing in place, isolated and frozen. And it's absolutely gorgeous. It's just, man, it's so much fun. It's really great. And that one really stuck with me. It did. So there's a lot of these. You know, I'm just picking from some of my favorites here. There's so many of these that you could really tease out and pick from here, certainly. So but those were some of my favorites. So moving on to the next point, the one thing that really makes my heart happy is that Fessenden's film stands true to Mary Shelley's original Frankenstein novella, right? So, however, you know, with that said, in the matter of becoming borderline, you know, dangerously exhausting, how many countless renditions of Shelley's fable have been imagined and gifted? You know, it seems like this has been done over and over and over again to the point of oversaturation. You know, personally, and I've always adored this story, I really have. The more Frankenstein we get, the better. And it's a really important one. It's got great themes and great messages throughout it. But, you know, I could see where some could be exhausted at this point, and that's valid. You know, so receiving another one, needed, arguably debatable. However, you know, and it's a big however, part of the brilliance of what Fessenden continues to do in his works and has done here is that he was able to write, direct, edit, produce, and a million other things, right? You know, but write and direct, though, a chopped up version of the tale and sew it all back together to present us something timely, exciting, emotionally relevant, fun, beautiful, and most importantly, feel refreshingly new as a vision while devastating us emotionally with the same 200-year-old guts. Not many can do that, and that's an impressive talent of his. He gets it, he puts his spin on something, and makes it innovative and really very special. This is not just another Frankenstein tale, and this needs to be watched. Thought it was a really intelligent interpretation that, you know, we're basically presented an ex-military medic who's back home now transitioning to everyday life, and he's not really coping all that well with his PTSD and is completely haunted by those he was unable to save, only to bring to life a human that now has to not only stand up but find his placement in the basic math of life amidst traversing arguably, you know, some of the most tedious societal times in our present day. You know, and he's aching to feel and be received as an accepted normal. It's really brilliant stuff. It's great writing. So let's segue into the talent acting in this film then. First, I'd like to highlight a segment of the movie where Polidori has later found out about Henry's and his success in Adam's rising and further development, right? So Polidori then meets a fairly healthy and cognizant Adam at that point, and he's excited beyond belief. Polidori cons Henry into giving up watch for the day to allow him to show Adam around the city, get him some real life experience, you know, under his belt. And, you know, so reluctantly, Henry agrees and puts Adam in Polidori's care. Polidori takes Adam to a museum to show him art, history, beauty, pain, suffering. This segment is really special. So let me cue this one up and then we'll take some time. I hope you enjoy this one.
So it begins. I don't suppose Henry's had the time to teach you the history of things, but allow me to summarize. Since the beginning, it's been war and warring, with factions of artists trying to find beauty and meaning, capture the agony and the ecstasy. This museum, it's a mausoleum to the aspirations of man. Nice, aspirations on him, don't you think, Adam? The Divine Comedy. Should Ugolino have eaten his offspring? It's all about choices. Some would say choice is an illusion. I prefer to give us some credit. The choices we make define the man. Come on. The Rape of the Sabine Women. I thought you'd like this one, Adam. Filled with action. Those women were tricked and can't be trusted. Terrible. Principles, justice, honor. Some would die for them, while others are a bit more shrewd. This is what they teach you in the Institutes of Higher Learning, Adam. A lot of useless knowledge that nobody gives a fuck about anymore. I did meet my darling wife in college. Don't get me wrong, there are some perks. She was very rich.
Cloud.
Yes, it is. How do you see the world, Adam? Do you see great swirls like Van Gogh? He died in poverty. He went mad and cut his own ear off. Modernity encroaches. 20th century angst. God is dead and we are left alone with our technology and our nightmares. It was the beginning of the end. A culture of narcissism and self-indulgence born out of the comforts of modern life. All that's left to do is enjoy the ride. This is my favorite place in the museum. Here we have artistry and science directly engaged with man's essential impulse. Violence. These are instruments of death. Look how lovingly crafted. From the blade to the bomb. Humanity does so love destruction. Depraved. That's what we are, Adam. Utterly depraved. Souvenir of our visit. You always have to have a souvenir, Adam. Speaking of memories, does anything here look familiar? Have you worked here long?
For a while, yeah. Thanks.
Thank you. Come on, Adam. It's not polite to stare.
Wow. So next, I would like to take a closer look at a bar scene between Adam, Alex Brough, and Shelley, played by Addison Timlin. Basically, Adam is railed against what he now has become increasingly aware of as the test tube holding cell imprisoning him made up of the Brooklyn Loft. And he's put together some of the inner workings of both Henry and Polidori. He's escaped them both, and he's fled the apartment after a heated and very confrontational scene with them to disappear into the night. Doing so, he finds safety and some shelter nearby at a local bar to hide away for a short time, where he encounters and meets a very lovely Shelley. So this one's a little bit longer, but let's take a quick few to check this one out. It's definitely worth it. Here we go.
Hey, Bud, you have a drink or what?
Whiskey.
Top shelf house, rocks?
Yes.
$8.
Hey, Sam, I'll get the next one. Hi. You fucked up? You look fucked up. But I wanted to buy you a whiskey because when you walked in here, you reminded me of Iggy Pop. You know who Iggy Pop is? Because that's the shit, man. Here, you gonna drink this? Come on, toast. Raise your glass, man. I'm Shelly. What's your name?
Iggy.
Just so you know, I've done every puzzle in this place already, so don't try any funny business. So what happened to you? I mean, Iggy, those are a lot of scars. Is that your real name?
I like music.
Cool. I do too. What kind of music are you into? Do you like the Stooges?
Gravity is your friend.
Yeah. Never thought about it like that. So you're gonna tell me what happened to you? You don't have to answer that, but I really want you to.
You have a tattoo. I have a tattoo.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, I've got a lot of tattoos, but you're not gonna see them all tonight.
I got this tattoo.
Wow. Hey, what is that? That's, Caduceus, right? It means, like, rebirth?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
Oh, come on, you don't know what it means.
No.
I bet mine's like that too. Thank God I never got a tattoo though. Oh, what about the scar, Iggy? Are you into like scarring and shit? I mean, that's some crazy shit. Okay, what do you say? One more round? That's it. I'm broke. Sam's so cheap. He won't give me a free one unless I'm here the whole night. You just say you're good at puzzles. And you're pretty quiet. You're pretty weird. What are you even doing around here?
I walked here.
Yeah? You live around here? I mean, I've never seen you before. I remember.
I don't go outside. I stay inside.
No wonder. I mean, you're so pale. I mean, what are you, like a vampire or something?
I don't know.
Well, it probably means you are one. Shit. It's getting pretty late, huh? I gotta go to work tomorrow. Fucking corporate slog. I know you wouldn't guess it by looking at me, huh? But yeah, just cogging the wheel. What are you gonna do? The problem is, I can't ever sleep at night. So I gotta come here every night and slam a couple, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Wow, you are pretty funny. What do you do?
Play ping pong.
You're drunk. Or you're just nuts. I don't know, but I'm pretty drunk. Yeah, I gotta go. You gonna stay?
I have nowhere to go.
What? I thought you said you lived around here.
No.
Huh. Well, I guess you can walk me home. I did buy you all those drinks. Oh, it's so cold. I live this way a lot of blocks. Man, you are really out there. Are you high?
I like you.
Yeah? That's cute, I guess. You can walk me home, I guess. You want to hold my hand? Weird.
All right. I really like that one. So finally, towards the end of the film, there's a very poignant narrative from Adam that resonated, and I wanted to include that here for you. So this is definitely closing in on spoiler territory, so if this is not something that you want to get involved with, let's do the earmuff thing. La 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 la. This is probably about a 3-minute clip, so if you want to fast forward, that would be the way to go. All right, here we go. And we're back, everybody. So hopefully we got the full group back. So moving on from that, hopefully you guys enjoyed the scenes that I cut and presented here. Those were a lot of fun. My only gripe, which is somewhat minor, was with Anna Kay's character Liz. She really takes a significant emotional punch from Henry time and time again throughout the film. And I mean, in most spots, he's a downright dick. You know, like in context. You understand that her and Henry have a long storied past, and you know she must truly love Henry for the toll she takes throughout it. I'm assuming there must have been love in the relationship at some point for her to keep standing up to him in efforts to be so helpful and supportive even still. However, Henry just keeps running her over at every opportunity, and it really is hard to take after a while. perhaps maybe not all that believable. So you have to wonder, you know, when is enough enough, and just cut it loose. Not to be cold, but just kind of put him in his place and, you know, let him drift on with his destined life crash course, you know. So that was the only thing that was a little bit of a tick. I wish there was some more connectivity there as far as like a spark between the two that made it believable. But outside of that, and to wrap up here, I did want to make a comment on the film score. The score by Will Bates is incredible. You heard a lot of that through the scenes that I cut in and presented. So really, really great work and supplements the film very well. Really great films generally boast really great scores. So let's finish strong with a small sample of Mr. Bates's work. It's worth it. So without further ado, here we go. Well, if that didn't grab you by the heartstrings and whisk you away, whew, maybe I'm the dope and it got me, but I don't think so. I don't think so. So I'll segue into the recommendation section. On rewatchability, I would say this is really very high. I could watch this film over and over again. As far as the fun satisfaction factor is also very high, this film really resonated in a lot of different ways, and I love it for that reason. The scare factor stays low. Most everything was low impact. More shock and awe in a lot of parts than anything. But that's not to take away from it. It just, it's really good at what it does, you know. And then we have the psych factor. I would say is on the higher end as well. This thing really wields a supersized emotional punch. And this thing guts you by the end of it. It's wild that way. So SLTH approved, yes. I've revamped the scoring system here a little bit. I'm going to go on a 10-point scale, and this will be the first review that I've done this way, but I'm going to give this a solid and a pretty high mark at a 7.7 out of 10. I liked it that much, you know. So overall recommendation for Frankenstein fans, this is an absolute must. It's a no-brainer. All the same for general horror audiences as well. This is an excellent, excellent film. Seek this one out. you know? So where we can view this film, it's currently streaming on Hulu at the time of this podcast. It's also streaming on Amazon Prime Video, where you can rent or buy it at an SDHD on VOD. The physical media there, we have the Blu-ray and DVD formats available. This is a Scream Factory title, so really fucking pumped about that. I own it. It's fantastic. It is just riddled with amazing bonus content, and that's a truly wonderful thing, and Scream Factory is always great for that. It's a Blu-ray DVD combo pack. It's a two-disc region A1. And so I'm going to kind of plug through some of the bonus features here. The first being an audio commentary with writer, director, editor, producer, magician, Larry Fessenden. That's actually really pretty great. That's worth checking out. Fessenden's Depraved. So we got the making of Frankenstein in a Brooklyn loft, which is actually on the Blu-ray format only. So just be wary of that. Depraved is the next feature, The Journey to Day One. The next segment we have is Acting Adam. One I'm going to highlight here is called Stitched, a conversation on makeup effects. So I'll revisit that here in a second. The next one we have is Building the Visuals of Depraved, which is really wonderful. Definitely check that one out. You got the theatrical trailer. And then this thing rounds out with an 8-page collectible booklet featuring photos and posters. I mean, this thing is just loaded. So well worth the investment. It's... you know, as all things Scream Factory are, so very, very good. So as far as circling back to Stitched, a conversation on makeup effects, this is a really cool bonus feature, and I wanted to play this one for everybody before we wrap up. So let me cue this one up for you. Pretty great insight here. Again, the makeup effects are wonderful on Adam, the monster. Just a terrific, terrific job. So stay tuned, and I'll have this one up for you in just a second.
Alex Bro in the full makeup, the first time was pretty breathtaking. Spears and Gerner did an incredibly beautiful job. They are artists and co-authors of this movie as much as anyone else that made it. After developing the movie for 5 years, we had like 3 weeks to make the makeup. So it's really just a tribute to everybody working hard that we got it. It was almost the culmination of a decade or so of working together.
I mean, how many Glass Eye Picks movies have we worked on?
I mean, a lot. We're both fans of Habit, The Last Winter. This was us getting a chance to work on a Larry Fessenden film. So this was like, wow, we get to do this incredible, like, Frankenstein, Fessenden Frankenstein movie, which was, you know, we knew it was going to be badass and also artistic at the same time. But we had to keep this very realistic.
So you could fit the city in New York City, yes. Which isn't too hard,
no,
but you can't be too extreme.
We're very influenced by plenty of, like, every other Frankenstein that you've seen, the monster. But we also knew what we didn't want to do. Like, this really had to work in our real world. We didn't want bolts in the neck. We knew he couldn't be green. We did throw a little tease of a scar in his forehead, as a little tribute to, like, the Boris Karloff.
The hand brace is a tribute to Karloff. The white eye is a tribute to Christopher Lee.
The one thing we just knew was we didn't want an overly scarred, zombie-ish character.
A monstrous,
yeah,
Frankenstein. And then he cast Alex Bro.
Yeah, Alex Bro. We'll from now be affectionately known as Bro, as we refer
as Bro,
to him.
Yes. B-R-E-A-U-X.
Yes. But he is a B-R-O, if you know what I'm saying. Like, he's a cool dude with a really cool dude. I'm sorry, that's it. I see a picture of Bro, and I knew this guy could be an incredible-looking Frankenstein. He has such an expressive face. He has this incredible brow. His physique.
It's the perfect specimen.
Perfect specimen. What changed was, once we met Bro and we actually initially started doing early tests, kind of testing out different versions of what we could do and where we could throw scars on, we did where his brain was removed and we had an incredible scar across his forehead. Very much akin to the Frankenstein we all know. But once we saw that, it didn't work.
I would say the biggest fact that we followed is that you would cut the brain open from behind.
When we were doing it in the test, it was because of Boris Karloff. It would never be. You would cut it in the back and flip it over. We needed something So then we started looking up, all right, what could actually happen if his eye socket, if his eyes were removed, we created a scar right there. But then we came up with a very simple thing. We decided to remove an ear as if the guy was wearing someone else's ear. Because it was subtle enough, yet monstrous enough to work in Larry's world. When we first did it with scars, we had scars everywhere.
Everywhere.
And that's where he said, well, we don't need this one, or this one works really well. Let's make this one look more inflamed.
We made a set of dentures just where his teeth were a little askew.
Just a little bit monstrous.
And, well, they didn't work.
Well, they worked again, but it took away from Bro being...
Right, because he was so fucking perfect.
We had a fake arm for a long time, and I felt like it was getting in the way of his access to something more subtle.
Well, we really learned on this that less is more. Everything that we added monstrous, you know, once he had to walk through a street in Brooklyn, that monstrous stuff became distracting. Pete and I both made a series, the technical term, sheep wounds. We made a bunch of wounds that generically we knew. It was after abandoning the life cast, the tooth cast.
The prosthetics were Prose transfers, measured to his body so they would fit. We made hundreds of
hundreds.
Hundreds. Hundreds.
Every day those wounds were taken off, ruined, and we had to create new ones. So thankfully we did have the molds home to keep running. Our first day
was
a culture shock. We jumped in, and that's the first time. Every time we did a test, we did it from the waist up. We did it from the waist up, one arm.
Right.
You know,
we never did the full
makeup, and it was like, I think it was when you were painting. You know, you went on and you really did these nasty veins and these, and like, it was that moment Larry was like, stop, keep that going. Like, I like that. So then we moved to something else. We never actually, every time we tested, it was kind of like jazz, man. We were just, you played your instrument in your time, and I played my time, my instrument in my time. Like, it just, we kind of riffed on everything, and it kind of all blend, it made a song together. I wasn't on set as much. I had some other commitments, and I was also creating some of those wounds while you guys were on set.
It was me and you.
Yep.
We had Ashley Thomas, who was there throughout the duration of the picture.
Yep.
We had Steve Saturn.
Yep.
To assist us for the full body makeup. And then Adelina Atashi, who was the makeup and hair person.
She came along and gave us a
hand. When she was done doing her, what she had to do, she hopped on board. And we created the full body Alex Bro Frankenstein.
The first day we did this, it was a 4-hour makeup. While they were setting up, Larry would come in and we'd change things on that day. We were also doing a lot of stuff. There was other gags happening.
We are doing everything on day one. That is the test makeup.
And the surgery stuff. Like for the autopsy and the surgery. Luckily, we have tons of molds of stuff from working on a bunch of other Glass Eye Picks movies. We were able to use legs we had from something else. We were able to use arms and kind of piece that all together. Larry was coming in, but he assured us, hey, boys, this will be, you know, camera footage or...
Web footage.
No.
And he's like, this is where we'll see some stuff and we can hide it through, you know, these are from, like, you know, cameras in the ceiling. It's going to be,
this is all from the laptop. This is all shot on a laptop. And that's where he wanted to have fun, too. Like, I want to see the brain come out. But I know there was one hero shot of the stitching. What'd you guys do?
So, it was a nice, thick silicone piece that you created. I applied it. I told David, the actor, like, listen, man, who, by the way, studied.
Yeah, that's
how
to really
do
cool.
Medical stitching. In
he
the
had
field.
His own little silicone.
He knew exactly how
pad.
To do it, and then they carefully, while they were shooting it, just stitched on the prosthetic that was on his shoulder.
Working with Glass Eye, the attitude you need is you pull your bootstraps up and go. Let's make some movies.
You're part of the team. You're making art. You feel.
And even though we're only the effects artists on the movie, we feel like we're helping make a movie. Like, there's an imprint. Every department has an imprint there. Like, we're all encouraged. It's like being part of a family.
To be working with Larry, we worked with him as a producer, plenty of times an actor. To show up on set and to actually be directed by Larry,
whose enthusiasm is infectious,
was a treat. I mean, you'll agree. Quite the rewarding experience.
Very rewarding. And I would like to say, if
And I hope there's more, Larry.
Yeah. Like,
let's keep going to that werewolf.
Pheasant and Frankenstein Part 2.
Werewolf by Night.
All right, so really like that segment. So to wrap up the episode, hopefully you've enjoyed episode 9. If you've not done so, please feel free to subscribe to the show and share this with friends and family you know. A positive review will always help the show out tremendously, helps get the show out to more people. Separately, you can also find the show via social media on Twitter at SLTH_podcast, on Instagram at SLTH.podcast. You can track the show via the Patreon website at patreon.com. Again, thank you for listening. Excited to bring you my next horror film review. Until then, stay curious, stay scared, take care of yourself, and I will talk with you all next episode.